Hey guys, I'm Chelsea.
And I'm Lauren.
And we are
The Financial Diet.
Now, listen, some of you guys who are listening to this or watching this who did not watch the channel like 6 years ago are going to be like, what the hell was that? Well, the true historians amongst you will know that I used to co-host the TFD YouTube channel with the person sitting here in the studio to my right, Lauren Verhaeghe, my co-founder and business partner. Who are you, Lauren, for those who don't know?
I'm Lauren. Just a little bit about me. You know, we co-founded the business together way back in like 2015. At the time, I was working at an ad agency. So yeah, I've been here since the beginning. I feel like, you know, when people come up to me at events and they know who I am, it feels crazy because I forget like that I was at one point on the channel very regularly because it's been a minute. I had to like, you know, bust out the lipstick, you know, fluff my hair, get back into, you know, the vibe of being on camera. It's a little intimidating, you know, but a long time has passed. So I'm here again and I'm the chief design officer, which is really exciting. It's a big responsibility to make sure that TFD is always looking fresh and cool and, you know, popping in the design space. You know, I love doing it. I'm a huge design nerd and it's just like super fun to have seen the company grow over so many years.
My heart.
Yeah.
So for people who watch the channel, you know, they back in the day, you've been to their eyes gone for quite some time. But fun fact, she's been here the whole time. She's never stopped working here. It's just she doesn't do it on camera anymore. Mm. Other things have happened in your life. Tell us a little bit. Catch us up.
Yeah. So since I've left the YouTube channel visually as a co-host, I have been, you know, just behind the scenes doing a lot of design work, you know, working on pitches and branding and like everything that you guys see, the podcast branding, like the stuff on the website. On a personal note,
I could be wrong here, but didn't you also give birth to a human being?
On a personal note, I was gonna say moving beyond work stuff. I had a baby. We have a 6-month-old daughter, Lily, who is just like my absolute obsession. I could just cry talking about her. I look at photos of her every night before I go to sleep. I'm like, I typify that like mom meme where it's like you like spend all day trying to get a 5-minute break from your child only to like spend like an hour on your phone scrolling about like of photos of them before you go to sleep at night, which is totally me. But she's so wonderful, and my husband and I bought a house, which is really exciting. Yeah, I lived in Ireland for a year. A lot's been happening. I mean, it's been the pandemic, like everything's been, it's just been a rough, in some ways, rough.
You got a dog?
I got a dog. Yeah, no, like the pandemic, that chapter of the last couple of years was rough, but everything else I have to say has been really wonderful. And yeah, everything from like the dog to the baby to the house, it's like I really do feel like, yeah, I feel like in some ways the same person, but a totally different person, you know?
That's so
funny.
From
when we started.
It's so funny because like anyone who knows Lauren, like all the people on the team and like anyone that we know in common, like you're just like such a like nice, positive, sunny person. And it's so funny how like, I mean, it's a great thing, like you deserve it, but it's so funny how just like, it's like that Lego song of like, everything is awesome. Like you had a great pregnancy. You like bought the house of your dreams. You like married the man that you like. Everything is just great for Lauren. It's great.
It's so funny, but I also feel like, I mean, I do get that maybe from an outsider's perspective, that could be the vibe that they're picking up on. But I do think in some ways it's a concerted effort to like always find the silver lining and to be like positive by choice. And I mean, we've talked a lot about this, and you're someone who I think exemplifies that in their own life about like choosing joy, which I think is like an important mindset to have. Like at the end of the day, I do feel like, you know, I try to always have a positive attitude because like, you know, it helps a lot.
It really does. I also feel like, for me at least, I don't know how you feel, but the job that we have is such a huge part of my happiness. Yeah. Like, I really do feel, especially now we have, like, the 4-day work week.
Oh, like, my gosh, yeah.
We work with, you know, all women. We have a flexible schedule. Like, everyone is so nice and great to work with. And I really do feel like when I look around at a lot of, you know, people in my life who have, you know, jobs where they're working crazy hours, or, you know, they have terrible bosses, or, you know, a dreadful commute every day, or, you know, all of these things. I'm just like, it is very much a privilege to have the work life that we have, even, you know, though it can be stressful at times.
100%. And I think that, you know, what I think about a lot is that, you know, I have the privilege, as do, I think, I mean, most of the women that we work with, like, say this similarly, which is, like, you don't feel like after a vacation, you're, like, coming back to a job that you're, like, slogging away at, and, like, it feels really sort of tedious and not fulfilling. Like, it's a joy and a privilege to work every day at TFD, and I do feel like year after year, especially now having a baby and being a mother, like, it's just an enormous, it's like the privilege of my life to work at TFD. Like, I know that I'll never have a job like that's better than this. Like, it's, I mean, it's true. It's like you get to work amongst people that you actually like and enjoy spending time with. I mean, Joe jokes around with me a lot. He's like, I just forget that you like are friends, like genuinely friends with the people that you work with. I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's really pretty amazing and rare to like actually like really enjoy the company of the people that you work with.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. I feel like the transition has been, so let's just give some context, right? So why is Lauren here, you know, with a bold red lip and all?
Why am I here?
Why are you here? What are we doing?
Well, we're talking about our really awesome workshop that we're going to be having for one evening in July.
Ooh, let's pull up that.
Okay. I was going to say the date, and all I was right. Like, I think it's the 28th.
It is Thursday, July 21st. So you were right on the day, but a week off. So it's Thursday, July 21st. And you guys will be getting an exclusive discount at that link in our description and in the show notes. So it's called the Entrepreneur Bootcamp, and basically it is a 2-hour deep dive on entrepreneurship, freelancing, building your small business, kind of striking out on your own, because obviously we started TFD together from literal zero. And now it's a 7-figure business. It supports a whole staff of employees. We got an office. We do quite a lot with it. And, you know, that journey has been, you know, we've had our moments, but, and also it's really important to say it's far and away not just us, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we did have other people throughout this process, but it is something where I feel like, especially for the first year and in those first steps, there are a lot of things that I think we both would have done very differently. Mm-hmm. And so this is really the workshop that we're doing together. It's, you know, longer than usual. We're doing 2 separate office hours where we each do an office hours about our own areas of expertise, you know, her more on the branding marketing side of your business, and me more on sort of the more revenue, financial structure, all of that. Because, you know, I really do feel like there are very few people, at least in my opinion, out there who are speaking in the business sphere, the entrepreneur sphere, who are also really focused on running kind of a holistic workplace, you know, a family-friendly workplace, you know, one that I think really prioritizes work-life balance and, you know, being a human first and foremost. I think a lot of this is really caught up in that whole, you know, hustle culture, maximizing revenue, showing off how much money you make, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's important for us occasionally to sort of like step back and think about, you know, like you said, what we could have done differently, and how that informs some of the changes and decisions that we make moving forward. What are the things that we really believe in? What are the core, you know, morals and like ethics of a workplace that we really want to see implemented? Because like we want to be, especially as co-founders, like I feel like, you know, it's important for me to stand by the business that we've created with like pride, and like that everyone here is respectful and respected. And, you know, you have to put those into practice. And what does that actually look like? And how can we be doing better? And how can we be evolving and making sure that we're running like a sustainable, financially sound business? Because there's a lot of people that we're responsible for at this point. And it feels like every year, you know, the stakes get a little higher. And that certainly wasn't the case when we started TFD. I mean, it was just the two of us. And we had support systems in place, which I'm sure we'll get into. But mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's always worth having things like this.
You know, that gets in. So we have a lot of questions from you guys that we'll get to. But, you know, that kind of brings me to the first thing I wanted to kind of talk about. Because I really like what I'm interested in is kind of looking at where we were at the very beginning, which is where a lot of people watching this might be with their own kind of journey, and where we are now. And, you know, you mentioned like, you know, we are at this place now where we have all this responsibility for people. Like, and it's funny, you know, I said in that little promo there that we are a 7-figure business, which we have been for a couple years. And I remember, I don't know if you remember this, but like years and years ago, there were like there other people in our industry who would talk on their blogs about like, I made 7 figures this year, blah, 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 blah. And we would be like, that is so effing crazy. Like, could you imagine? Like that would, I couldn't even imagine what life would be like, blah, blah, blah. And I'm really interested, I have my own thoughts, but I'm interested, like, does it feel the way that you thought it would feel to be on that side of it?
in some ways, it does not feel the way that I thought it might feel back then, because I thought that it would feel like these people to me had this aura around them, like I did it myself and I'm the one, like, for whom riches are just like falling out of the sky. Like, I hacked my business and I'm just like rolling in money. And it kind of felt like aspirational, yes, because obviously everyone likes to earn a good amount of money. It's a tool for many important things. But at the end of the day, it's like, I don't want to stand behind something that I feel like is not sustainable or like scammy in any way, or just sort of like built on matchsticks and whatever. Like, I do feel like it took us a while to build up to having a 7-figure business, but I do feel like you mentioned earlier, like, it's not just us. We have a team of people around us. And so I think that it's like a shared experience, a shared journey, a shared undertaking, and at the end of the day, a shared joy that we've all like put in the work to make something this successful. So I do feel like it's exciting and wonderful, but I'm like, of course it is. Like, we work hard. We're like keeping our heads down for the most part and like really just like doing things the right way. And it feels like, I don't know, in some weird cosmic way, like, and we got rewarded for it. Like, it feels good. Mm. And like, I'm like, yeah, we deserve to have a 7-figure business. Like, totally. Yeah.
I actually, so first of all, hats off to you to being like, yeah, we did it right and we deserve it. Because I feel like there's way too much self-deprecation from women in this space, or like really entrepreneurship in general. Like, yeah. There's all that imposter syndrome. And I used to feel that way a little bit, but it's been years now. And I'm like, I don't have imposter syndrome. Like,
truly, I do not anymore. I'm like, and now that we've been around the block several times, I'm like, most people like are, for the most part, just like, not very good at what they do in this. Like, you meet so many people in this industry where I'm like, yeah, this is not, you're no longer intimidating. Like, now that I've gotten like a peek behind the curtain or like under the hood, it's just like, we are 100% capable of doing that and probably better and like faster. And totally. We're like a very nimble business. And I feel like it's no surprise to me that when you get this many talented women in a room with like a shared vision and like a happy, pleasant place to work, like, you can do good things. You can do awesome stuff.
100%. And like, we have seen behind the curtain at like some big businesses, and we're talking about, there's the media space, there's mm-hmm. the financial space, there's the kind of influencer space, like, and you would, I think I was shocked at first at how, like, first of all, there's a whole level of it where it's just like people are crazy unprofessional, not reliable, yeah. like all of that, set it aside. There's also like a whole level of like, you're seeing top level executives who don't even know what the meeting is about when they yeah. come into the room. Like,
yeah.
and you know, just like a level of complete lack of preparedness. And then you've also seen like in media and in a creative industry, like, I personally, part of what has always made me feel very like good about where we are, and like, for context, like, Lauren and I don't earn the most in the company and almost never have, and that has always been kind of an active choice in the sense of like, yes, it prioritizes sustainability, you know, it makes, because at a certain level, like, more money is not necessarily worth a way higher level of risk mm-hmm. and unsustainability and uncertainty, especially because in this industry, like, when we started out, it was like the height of like the girl boss mania.
Totally.
Like, media was flooded with money. Like, all the social networks were blowing, you know, publications and news websites and video channels up. Mm-hmm. And over that time, like, I can't think of one of those big players that hasn't completely closed, gone through like 15 rounds of layoffs,
yeah.
pivoted to video and back, yeah. hired a bunch of people to fire them. Like, it's yeah. such a volatile industry.
It really is. And I feel like, because we never went big on the risk, we never had to sort of like, because we've talked about this several times, like taking on investor money and what the implications of that are and like the goals that you have to hit and sort of the level of stress and pressure that puts on you as a company. And it's just like, I don't think that we were ever really interested in just like putting that burden on ourselves, because it was like, at the end of the day, the risks are too high. Like, that would mean laying people off. That might mean not paying people what they deserve to be paid. It's like, I think that the model that we've come up with at this point is like slow and steady. And it's like, we've done things that have felt risky, but not really at the end of the day. Like, the events, like launching that mm-hmm. part of the business felt incredibly risky because we had to lay out a bunch of money to hire staff. But it ended up working out. And I think that we were really just sort of like, you know, absorbing what was going on in the industry and like seeing where the pressure points were and like absorbing it to like do it better on a smaller scale almost.
Definitely on both sides. Like, we made changes, like, you lived at home longer. Mm-hmm. I kept freelancing for like the first 2 years and made most of my income that way. But like, for the first, and I have the numbers and we'll go over them in our class, just to kind of break it down year by year. But for like the first 2 years, we were really not taking home basically anything.
Yeah.
And it's been several years now that we've been just like payroll employees that I don't even really think about it anymore. I'm sure like you, I just, and we have our 401k, we have our benefits. Like it's just second nature the way it is for a lot of salaried employees. But I'm interested to hear kind of what you think about, you know, going through that journey, what you think about looking back at the beginning of it when it was so touch and go, and like how we knew when to stay motivated, when to push through, because looking back, like there were many times that we objectively could have quit.
Yeah. I mean, that's, there's so many layers to that question. There are so many different ways I can answer that. So it's just like thinking about where to start. But I mean, overall, like I do think that I probably could have worked longer while doing TFD in the very beginning. I think that if I could go back in time, I would probably not have quit my full-time job as early as I did. I think I probably could have, you know, worked full-time and done TFD more or less full-time as well with the amount of responsibility that I had back then. I think I was like 24, 25. Mm-hmm. And I meet people now, like we just had breakfast with people this morning who were, they're doing, you know, their full-time job and their full-time side gig with a four-year-old. And I'm just like... amazing, good for you. But that's probably one of the biggest things I do just to take the stress off of those initial days, just in terms of financial preparedness. Like I was basically just like crushing, like eating through my entire savings during those first like 6 months to year and a half, I would say. And that was a decision that I had the privilege of making because I lived at home with my parents, because I didn't have a child, because I had no other, you know, I had enough money to pay for things like my student loan and my car bill and stuff like that. So that wasn't a huge concern. So that's one change I would make. And I would also have made a change of like, you know, keeping myself more responsible in the sense of like, you know, keeping a focus on the big picture. That's something that you and I have talked a lot about, is that like when you're running a small business, you know, from the position that I was in, I was very reactive. Things would come in and I would have to like pivot and pivot and pivot. And I think that I could have done a better job at just like narrowing down what I knew that I was good at, what I could offer to the business, and being very clear with myself and more importantly you about, okay, this is where my skill set stops. We need help. And if we can't get paid help, like how do we find a way to get this done for like very little cost? You know, there are creative ways around these things. But I think I was just trying to do everything really well and not giving myself any sort of grace for not knowing how to do things. I was really, really hard on myself. Lots of unnecessary stress. There were many nights where I didn't sleep. I had several panic attacks. Like, and that's just the way it is. You know, when you're running a business...
That breaks my heart.
I mean, it's, but it's true. Those early days are tough for any business getting launched and off the ground. And, you know, that was with absolutely no other responsibility than myself. Like now as a mom, owning a home, having a husband, having a dog, having a baby, like all these different things, I give people so much more credit for doing these things later on in life, because at the time these felt like unsurmountable stressors. But now looking back on it, I'm like, I should have given myself a break. Like I shouldn't have been so hard and stressed out about those things that ended up not being that big of a deal. But yeah, I mean, you asked another question about sort of, you know, the issue of making money too. And like when we finally got to a place where we were taking home a more regular salary, you know, I felt like I won the lottery. I was like, wow, seeing that monthly like money hit my bank account was amazing. And I just loved that I got to budget again. Like when you're on more of a freelance salary, it can be difficult to budget. You don't know what you're going to earn each month and sort of how to prioritize things as well as you can when I think you have like a more regular income coming in. Mm-hmm. So that's been something I've really enjoyed now that the business is like more sustainable and like predictable and lucrative.
Yeah, sure. Totally. You know, it's interesting. Like, obviously, it makes me, you know, sad to think of you being so stressed out. And of course, I was too. But
yeah,
I mean
you were right there with me. I mean, like, and things like now, they just feel like so like, they just feel like problems that were like easier to solve. But at the time when you have a lot going on and there's like your to-do list is like 50 items long, like the smallest thing can really feel very crippling.
Totally. And know? I mean, we had some early failures. I mean, for me, I think the issue is more like I definitely I have personally just like a lot of regrets from that early time, in the sense of like, you know, how I handled things, how I handled stress. Like, I probably should have been in therapy for the first 2 years, honestly. Like, I wish I had honestly, and I honestly think, and we'll talk about it in the workshop, but like, looking back, I would have budgeted for at least some counseling, because I was so stressed all the time, more from a perspective, and this is something that I still kind of struggle with a lot, but I feel such an outsized sense of responsibility for everyone else, and like, I cannot let this fail, you know? And like, sometimes these things are totally out of your control. Like, if we didn't get the PPP loans during COVID, we probably would have had to stop. And that, but I don't think, like, sometimes I feel like looking back or in those early days, like, I don't know how I would have dealt with it if I did have to stop and in my eyes fail. Like, I think it was so tied up in my identity. I had, you know, especially because a lot of it was me public facing, like I felt like it was just not an option. And that stress for me, I think, made me in a lot of ways like a worse person. Like, I was more, you know, controlling and anxiety ridden about everything, and would get manic over these like really small details, like on an Instagram post would be wrong, and I would fully spiral about it and lose my mind. But I think that because in that beginning, like, you were at my kitchen table, like, we didn't have any separation of personal and professional life. And like, that I think is one of the things that was most kind of, that was the biggest mistake looking back, was like not allowing myself or giving myself the tools and resources to like fully really separate the two out. Whereas now, I mean, it's definitely like we have 6 weeks vacation a year. We have the 4 day work week. We have a physical office that we go to regularly. So for me, I very rarely think of work outside of work for the most part.
Same. Like I, like I remember like not going anywhere without my laptop, because it felt like at any moment something could pop up and just like need fixing. And that sustained level of that flight or fight response in your body.
Fight or flight.
Yeah. When you are stressed out about something, over time, like, it just leads to some serious like burnout. And I don't think I really grappled with that until like I hit the brakes when I went to Ireland, where I was working part-time for a little while, and I got to truly step back for the first time in like 5 years and be like, I feel so burned out. And I remember you saying something similar to me, where you're just like, I've, and this happened recently, where you're like, I've just been doing this like on this like hamster wheel for so long that like, if I don't take a step back, I will burn out in like a seriously big way that I don't know if I'll come back from. And it's scary. But I feel like, you know, hindsight's 2020, and obviously the confidence that I have now as a 32-year-old woman, you know, I would have told my younger self, like, if you need to step back, that's okay. If you need a month break, that's okay. If you need to say, I'm not up for this and I can't do this, that's okay. And I would 100% do that now. But like Lauren of 2016, 2015, like, I would just power through until there, I was just like running on fumes, and I would have never given myself that like out to sort of say to you or Joe or my family or my friends who watched me do this very scary thing that not a lot of people I know did. Like, I wasn't giving myself that ability to just be like, you know what, this is very mentally taxing. I need a minute.
Totally.
So and, like, yeah.
I mean, you mentioned that that happened to me recently. I don't think I've talked about it on TFC, maybe not, but I definitely, the hardest time I've had at work has been this past winter. And I almost was hesitant to talk about it because it is pretty isolated. Like I've said a lot here, like 99% of our work life is, I think, more ideal than 99% of people have. Like, I definitely think that that is, you know, something I don't take for granted. But, you know, there was a time last year where both of my business partners left in rapid succession. You went on maternity leave. Our other partner stepped down totally to focus on being a full-time mom. And we had a really tough winter because of, you know, Omicron coming back up and the market being so unstable and all of that. And it was like, it was, you know, the scariest time, the most stressful time financially, like, and it was one of those, and this happens sometimes in business, these moments where you're just like, you know, rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic because there's only so much you can do and there's only so much you can, you know, offset the things that were happening, which is why we, you know, went more aggressive about, you know, promoting the membership program, and, you know, doing things to help you know, diversify our revenue beyond what is out of our control. But I did, I mean, I like fully broke down in a meeting, sobbing, couldn't even talk because I was just like, and interestingly, that happened once things were a lot better. Mm-hmm. You know, once she was back, you know, the revenue was back where it needed to be. Like, on paper, it should have been easier. But like you said, like, you don't realize the extent to which your body is just like accumulating yeah. elevated cortisol and you're just constantly stressed. But yeah. now, luckily, with, you know, the hindsight that I discussed, like, because I feel like I know how to recognize it and deal with it, because I've been to therapy, because I, like, you know, have kind of changed my approach, like, I do think several years ago, I might have just totally quit. Mm-hmm. I might have, you know, freaked out. I might have, you know, not been the person that I wanted to be at work. But, you know, I think now one thing that especially the volatility of the past few years has taught me when it comes to entrepreneurship is that, like, there is going to be a lot that is out of your control. Yeah. And you have to accept that outside of what you can personally do better, like, the rest of that is not a professional question. It is an emotional slash therapy question of, like, how do you deal with that stress? But yeah. there, you can't try to force it, I mm-hmm. think is such a powerful lesson. And I do think that, like, when I look at people who start out and they quit early, like, obviously I can't speak for you, but I don't regret not quitting. Like, yeah. I'm so glad that we did this. Same. And we have this and we powered through.
Yeah.
But there is no guidebook as to, like, which, you know, disappointment or, you know, we had our first publisher go out of business and yeah. still owed us like nearly $100,000, which was everything to us at that time. And like, mm-hmm. I think we both definitely thought about quitting. But I think, you know, looking back, especially from these past couple years with COVID, like, I would have even gone back to myself and said, like, make the choice either way. No choice is right or wrong, but understand that, like, you have to exhaust everything in your power. And then once you're past what you can control, give it up to God.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah. And I just feel like in terms of, like, wanting to quit, I felt like I always was thinking in my mind, like, I can't go out on this note. Like, I can't step back now. Like, I want, if I'm ever going to walk away, want to end on, like, a high note. And, like, that's in a weird way what kept powering me through, because I'm just like, I don't want to look back on this in 5-10 years and be like, man, you really, like, bowed out when the going got tough. And I was like, that was just, like, a hang up that I had, even though it's, like, totally 100% fine to do that if you need to do that. But at the time, I was just like, I want to just, like, you know, make sure that I'm, like, leaving on the up and up. But I'm very happy that, like, things worked out and that we didn't each quit at certain points.
I know.
And here we are today.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, the real tough thing, I think, is having a litmus test of, like, where you are genuinely trying your best mm-hmm. and when it's out of your control.
Yeah. And I mean, this is maybe, like, directly related to that, but also it was very difficult to be, like, your own boss for a very long period of time. I mean, I'm still my own boss. I mean, we work for ourselves. And I think that what I really struggled with, especially in the early stages, was, like, understanding that there was, like, no one who is going to, like, tell me to do something or not to do something. Like, it was within my power to either continue down one path until it was, like, no longer serving the business and, like, I wasted a bunch of time, or to, like, have to step back and say, no, you have to pivot. Like, that's just been, like, an ongoing challenge. And, like, even to this day, it's sort of, like, it's a struggle to find motivation on certain days, because you're just like, when I don't have to answer to anyone, I can just phone it in, but then I'll feel bad about it, so maybe I should work harder. And actually, while I'm at it, I'll do this thing, and then your day gets going and it's fine. But it is difficult to be your own boss for a long period of time. And I think that what's been helpful for me is to see the just entire team as the people that I'm accountable to. Like, and totally. If I don't show up and if I don't do what I have to do, then, like, I'm disappointing several people, which is, in my mind, way worse than disappointing one person, your boss, and, like, getting someone pissed off or, like, getting reprimanded. Like, I would feel super bad if someone, like, that I genuinely like working with and respect has to come to me and be like, I've noticed that you're, like, phoning it in. That would be horrible to hear. So
that would be horrible to hear. That's a nightmare. Yeah. That is an interesting point. I mean, I think, and obviously, again, we'll talk about this in depth in the in the class. But I do think the be your own boss aspect of it is, and I think probably it's fair to say that I had that to an even greater extent than you did, mm-hmm. because as the CEO, I think there was an extent to which, and majority owner, like I'm sort of a default, not your boss, but like the head of things, yeah. you know? And
there,
so
there has to be, I think, some level for any healthy business. I do think that there has to be someone who's like able to run the ship with a certain degree of like authority. Not that like I look at you like a boss, but I think that it is important, because when you're doing everything like 50-50, I think that would be a little bit challenging for you, especially because you were the more public facing person, because you had that audience from your previous job and you were the one who was like leading the channel after I had left. Like, I think the stakes definitely felt higher for you than they did for me, because I was like, okay, at the end of the day, and we've talked about this very openly, like at the end of the day, like if the business collapses, like I'm just gonna like walk away and sort of like no one will miss Lauren Verhaegh on the internet. Like I don't have any sort of like presence.
Thank you.
But like your following is more substantial than mine, and you would have to like address it in a way that I wouldn't have to like publicly address it. And I think that that there is freedom in that. Whereas like you felt definitely more like I'll have to answer for like the failure of TFD, and I have to be the one to like shoulder that visible responsibility, even though on the back end we were both involved in it. But yeah, I mean, it was a stressful position for you to be in. And I think that like very early on, we understood where each of our strengths, you know, were and where they lied. And for me, definitely, being a leader comes naturally. I do enjoy working with people, and I always like I've had a really wonderful time working with the designers and like, you know, creating that environment, that safe work environment where we're going back and forth on things like that, and I really do enjoy it. But it's difficult for me to handle the pressure of like managing a large team, whereas I think that's like more suited to your personality type, and you really thrive doing it. So yeah, I mean, it's a long winding road, it feels like, from where we started to where we are now, but I don't have like a lot of regrets, and I don't have a lot of like big sweeping changes that I would have made. Like
one thing that's not a regret or a change, but I do feel like there's no way to give a sweeping generalization, but I do feel pretty sure, having freelanced for a long time and having started a legit business, like if you're going to freelance, obviously you're solo. And I think that can be a great career for many people. Like I'll probably never be an employee again after TFD. Like I'll probably just be freelance, unless it's like the most chill, amazing job ever. Yeah. But like, even then, I've seen a lot of people in media get called in by these siren songs at these big companies with these executive titles and get laid off 7 months later. But that's a whole other story. But if your goal is to start a fleshed out business where eventually you'll probably have staff, you might have inventory, you know, office space, all that stuff. I mean, my personal recommendation is that you have a partner, because I really feel, looking back, like no question this would not have existed if either of us had been alone.
No
first
way.
And foremost.
No way.
But also like, one thing, and I have to say, like, hats off to us. I will never forget someone that I knew in the industry when we were first starting out, like, warned me so much against having a partner. It was like, you're going to end up in a courtroom, like, blah, 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 blah. Like, it never works out, this, that, and the other. It has worked out 7 years later plus. So it can happen. But it's also that, like, you know, on paper, when I was starting out, because I had a media background, a creative background, like, on paper, it would have been more intelligent maybe to get like a financial person or a salesperson. But I always think and say, like, I don't think it would have worked with almost anyone but you, because you did have, well, not only did you have the support system at home, which so few people have, and that in and of itself, it was almost like we were four people at first, you know, because of that
100%.
Support system. But also like you had the complementary personality type and the ability to power through things, and we could kind of motivate each other and hold each other accountable and things like that. So I actually think in terms of partnerships, like, yes, complementary skill sets are important, but often what you're getting in a partner is just the ability to not be alone, to have someone to help keep you accountable, to have someone to push you forward, and also to give just from the get-go a reason to have more structure in place.
100%. And also, like, someone that you, I mean, it's essential to me, like, if you're finding a partner, that it's someone that you genuinely like and you enjoy them and like their company. And I don't know how you would do this with just like somebody that you like randomly found because they had like a good qualification or some like letters at the end of their name that you were like, ah, check, I need this person in my like, you know, network to like help me do this thing and to entrust with this business. Like, I don't know, like we didn't really know each other beforehand, but it was clear to me very early on that like we just clicked and we did get along.
Our husbands get along quite well.
Yeah, and like we're genuinely friends, and that's difficult to find. I mean, people like bemoan the fact that it's incredibly tough to find friends as an adult, you know, but like it's the most profound friendship that I've made. Like it's I mean, it's so meaningful and
shared yeah, it's sentiment.
Like, yeah, it's like as an adult, it's incredibly rare to meet someone like that. You know, and I definitely consider like 24, 25 adulthood, like,
totally.
You know, and but yeah, so I think that that's just something that it's important to reflect on. And that's a good piece of advice to give to someone, like find that partner, find your someone. And, if it doesn't work for the long haul, that's okay. You know, if it's a great partnership for a less amount of time, like that's fine. Like it doesn't need to be, you're not getting married to them necessarily. Like,
no,
in terms of, I mean, in paperwork and on, in terms of contracts and stuff, it does kind of feel like a marriage of sorts, but.
And I will say on that note, like two things. One, even if TFD hadn't worked out, and this is something to stress about entrepreneurship, like it is almost inevitable that in doing the work it takes to start a small business or, you know, create a personal brand or whatever, like you are going to be adding a ton of really invaluable skills to your resume, mm-hmm. like for whatever job you end up doing after. So I truly don't believe there's ever anything that is a complete negative unless you were very, you know, not super responsible about investing money and things like that, which we'll get into in the workshop, but we've never taken investment. We've never put money into this except for occasionally like quick loans for payroll and stuff like that when, you know, the company was tight on funds. But it's never like we were like, oh, we put a ton of money. We didn't have an office for years. We kept costs as low as possible. So I would say that like, even if it doesn't work out, it's important to keep that in mind. But then the other thing, as far as partnership goes, you know, it really, I mentioned that like it forces you to add structure early on. And I think it really speaks to why prenups are very important because, you know, the first thing we did starting a company was get a lawyer to do an operating agreement mm-hmm. that was like, this is what this person owns. This is what this person owns. This is what they have to be in agreement about. This is what happens if the company goes away. Like, you know, this is how they give you, you know, they get to give themselves raises or payments or all of these things. Like all of those things were really established up front. And, you know, that I think allowed from the get-go there to be such a level of, you know, trust, protection. Mm-hmm. And of course, like, you're a very magnanimous person. Like, I think neither of us have ever been, you know, selfish about money, which has been a huge privilege. But like, I think a lot of the messiness in small business comes when you don't set up the rules early on. Mm-hmm. And then once money comes in, I think it was our lawyer who was like, he called it money madness. He was like, you have to put the rules in place and decide the amounts before the money comes in, because once it's on the table, people go crazy.
Well, I mean, because like, especially when you're in this like zone of, you know, you're getting paid very sporadically. You don't know when it's going to come in. It's very exciting and overwhelming to finally get that chunk of money where you're just like, we should take it all. And it's just like, well, actually, no, you know, we should reinvest it in the business in this way or that way. And it's like, you need to make sure that you guys are on the same page before you ever see that money, because circumstance and life and the things around you that are not directly involved with the business have an influence on like the decisions you're making for the finances of the company. Of course, you know, we're human, like it's going to have an impact, but getting paperwork done and contracts in place and all that stuff done before you really get into the nitty-gritty of running the business, I think, is essential and just keeps you, you know, safe down the road.
Totally. Like, and that's why, again, I bring it back to the prenups. It's like, I've become more and more shocked as this has gone on that it's less and less a concern for married couples, you know, when the divorce rate is 50%, because like, we've had conversations about like, you know, to be a business partner is to have a level of shared financial commitment and intertwinement. Like, we have to co-sign on loans. Mm-hmm. We're responsible for keeping payroll going. Like, we like have both bought homes in the past year, and that has huge implications for, you know, the company's line of credit and things like that. And because of the nature of that relationship, like, obviously there needs to be all kinds of contracts in place. These need to be, like, you know, above board meetings mm-hmm. that are, you know, very well laid out and all of that. But, like, when you're marrying someone, you're getting more financially entangled and legally obligated than literally anything else in your life. And we don't even think about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's another conversation for another day, but I mean, that is 100% true. Yeah.
Yeah, so before we get to the audience questions, she was like, traffic copped that conversation.
I'm not going to go down that route because I don't know enough to intelligently speak on that when I know there are many other people who can, but like, suffice to say that, yes, you were correct.
So you guys sent us in a bunch of questions, so we're just going to go through them nice and quick.
Someone actually did ask us if we would ever do another business. Like, would you ever start from scratch again? I think they wrote in and, like, do another business from scratch. My answer,
yes, they did.
I'll go first, is that, yes, I would do that again. I've had, like, so many ideas for, like, very, very creative, like, artistic design forward things that I would do, but on a very small scale. Like, there are a number of things that I would do, like, you know, that, and I could channel into, like, an Etsy shop or something, like a website, and sell things that way. But it would be a product driven thing that was very small scale and probably just me and mm-hmm. like maybe one other person, like an arts collective or whatever, what have you. But I don't think that I personally would want to do something as big as TFDA again, mm-hmm. just because, yeah, I would always be comparing it to TFD, mm-hmm. and I don't know if it would ever feel like I could put that kind of energy and, like, single-minded determination to something else in the way that I had to do for TFD. It's intense, and I feel like I had it in me, like, once, mm-hmm. but, like, I could do it again on a smaller scale is the answer.
Whenever you meet guys who are, like, serial entrepreneurs, they are the most dead behind the eyes.
It's like, I mean, I respect it, like, on some level. I'm like, if you have the energy and, like, the ambition and the drive, but I'm like, I feel like, again, just, like, thinking about everything else that's going on in the world, like, I just feel, like, mildly sapped of the ambition to, like, do something like that again. Like, it feels kind of like, what's the point?
Like, yeah, also, like, you made it big with the one thing that you, yeah. like, were really good at and you were, like, really invested and implicated in, and then now your job is to, like, go give a little bit of money to a bunch of companies where you meet with them once a month and you have, like, no idea what's going on and, like, just, like, hope it works out. Yeah. Like, no. Anyway. Oh, also, to my answer to the question is, would I ever start a business again? Only if it has nothing to do with media. Like, I would love maybe one
totally.
Day.
Totally. I totally agree yeah. with you.
This industry ever again. But I would definitely, like, one, like, tiny dream that I have is, like, I would love to maybe one day own, like, a little, not own, I don't know about own. Well, maybe own, like, a really, like, a small boutique hotel somewhere.
Oh, chic.
I would love to do that.
Up your alley.
I have a ways to go, but I love hosting. I love mm-hmm. entertaining. I love even just, like, when people spend, like, we have a lot of overnight guests, and I love, like, I put out their little slippers and their little carafe of yeah. water with their little lemon, and I love it.
You love curating an experience for people, I have to say, and it shows. I mean, it's your love language. Like, getting a little granola bar on your pillow with your little thing of water, your fresh towel. Like, I've seen it, people, in person. Chelsea Fagan residence.
At the
yeah.
estate.
Yeah.
Okay. But I know that industry is no joke, so yeah. I don't take that lightly. Okay. Wait, this person, I just have to shout out for how many question marks they use. Balancing entrepreneurship with exhaustion, 5 question marks. How? 4 question marks. Sounds like you could use some sleep.
I don't know. I mean, I drank a lot of coffee. I mean, that's how I battled exhaustion. I just, like, put a Band-Aid over it. But, I mean, to the point I was raising earlier is that, like, I don't think I did have a lot of balance in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I was exhausted. I was overstimulated. I was, like, stressed out constantly and not doing so great. You know, and I feel like, is that inevitable for people starting up a small business? Like, probably to some degree it is inevitable. I mean, it's a terrible thing to say, but, like, I don't think I really did a great job in the early days. Now I have a much more mm-hmm. balanced life, but it's because we have a staff.
Despite, like, having a child.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Lily's a very good sleeper. She does 12 hours every night. Out.
I have to say, anecdote on the coffee thing, a fun fact about Lauren is that, as I've mentioned, she is just like the nicest, most pleasant ray of sunshine. But having traveled extensively with her for work, the only time, like, there was a different side. Yeah. The mornings that we'd be like traveling for work and you did not have access to coffee. Yeah. Like,
yeah, I'm not proud of that, but I do need a cup like ASAP. Like, I'll be in bed in the morning and I'll hear like Joe get up and I'm like, can you go make us coffee? Like, I don't want to have to start the day without just like my morning cup of coffee. And I just like, I can go like maybe 2 hours, but then I start to get like nasty.
Testy.
Yeah, I guess
like, definitely the manifestation of like the don't speak to me until I've had my coffee memes.
Yeah, a little testy.
Okay, if you only had $500 to start with, what tools would you invest in first? I love this question.
Well, I'll let you start with that one because I need a minute.
What tools? I mean, it totally depends on the type of business.
Yeah.
But I would say what I would invest in is some software for just like bookkeeping, you know, some basic legal stuff and, you know, invoicing, all of that kind of stuff. And then just setting up your web presence, getting all your domain names, getting maybe paying for, you know, some help with the logo. Mm-hmm. Like, and probably that might go over 500, although a lot of this is available for less. But like, definitely like setting up your online presence as soon as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are websites that make it super duper easy to like get graphics going and get a website started. And so, like, there are a lot of things that if you spend enough time on YouTube learning how to do these things, you can do them yourself. It's not, I don't think it's outside of anyone's capabilities, but it does take a lot of time. So that's what you're really sinking in there instead of money. But I agree. Those are essential.
Okay. And I feel like even with, like, Canva now, you don't even need Photoshop.
No. I mean, yeah, they have so many tools, like, online that you can use for free.
InDesign would be the one.
No, it's Photoshop, yeah. But they're, like, sort of, you know, a hybrid InDesign, Photoshop.
But, I mean, yeah, there's just, like, so many good free tools available now. Yeah. Okay. How do you find clients? I'm kind of an introvert and this worries me. So one quick note is we do have a whole section of the class that's literally just going through client outreach, like the tools we use, examples of emails that work, like where we find them, all of that kind of stuff. And it does vary industry to industry. But I would say, like, for the most part, if in any industry that you're looking for clients, like if you just search a bunch of terms around that, you're going to find, like, you know, forums and websites and places where people coalesce to like share tips, to share email addresses, you know, to just kind of commiserate. And there are a lot of really good tools. Like we use Mixmax, which is an email plugin that really helps for email outreach, you know, really being good about things like Trello, Google Calendar, all of that stuff. And having templates for the emails.
Yeah.
Having good templates that you very, very heavily edit and curate to make sure that they're personalized and you're not just copying and pasting, but you should have an easy way to like, this is what I attach, this is the information I provide, these are the stats, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I would also add to that, like, we are, you know, as business owners, I think we did several things along the way that like weren't exactly typical. Like, we were never really super duper like networking heavy. Mm-mm. Like, we kind of played the long game of like, if we take time to find clients that we enjoy working with, it'll never feel as forced as it might have if we just like went out and were like selling at all times at any cost. And it's just like those relationships at the end of the day might have felt much more like tedious to like sustain, and much like you ever have to like get it up to do that like again and again. And like as someone who's like slightly more introverted than you, like that would have been difficult for me. So I think that like seeking out the kind of clients that feel a little bit more, I don't know, just like within your like aura was the word I'm looking for, is or more like your speed, your vibe, it makes it easier to do those things in the long term. Like, you're not having to sort of like, I don't know, put as much effort into it emotionally, like socially.
Totally agree. So we have Andrea asking, what metrics can I use to decide that if I should continue or to try something else? Obviously, again, this is very dependent on your like trade, but I would say from like a financial perspective, one thing that I wish we had done was like set out some benchmarks for ourselves in the beginning, you know, make them do some market research, make them, you know, realistic, make them based on also what our needs are, and have those benchmarks. And again, we'll go over this, but have those benchmarks in place, you know, at maybe quarterly intervals. ideally while you're still working your full-time job, so they're not, you know, live or die. But really set out benchmarks for the finances and hold yourself accountable to, like, I set these for a reason, mm-hmm. you know?
So helpful. And then I also, to add to that, I would say, like, what's been really helpful for me and, like, us as a business is just, like, understanding, like, the pie chart of where your time is going and, like, the return on investment on that time. I think it's a really useful thing to be like, okay, what am I spending the most time doing? And, like, what is actually bearing out the most, output in terms of, like, investment and dollar amount and, like revenue that you're driving with whatever that is, and like understanding if you need to shift your time to doing things that are bringing in more money. That's an important thing to have just like your finger on the pulse of, because you don't want to be like really spending so much of your resources in terms of time on one thing that's really not productive or financially fruitful for your business, you know?
I think that's, yeah. I mean, definitely assessing whether or not you're getting more efficient. Yeah. Our colleague Jane likes to say getting more juice for the squeeze.
That's I love it.
Phrase she's fond of, but it's really true. Like, are you able to do more with less? Are you mm-hmm. getting better? Are you learning from your mistakes? Are you templating things? Are you, you know, repeating what works? Like, mm-hmm. I think those are all really good metrics. So last question from the audience. Actually, it's kind of a two-parter, but how do you work on your leadership skills and how do you navigate growing a team?
I would say that I work on my leadership skills by really doing the work, because it doesn't come that easy for me, I guess, as maybe I thought it did. But like understanding the way that other people see me when I make certain decisions, when I say certain things, when I ask for certain things, when I deliver work a certain way. Like, I think that for so long I was used to being like the only person in the room outside of you, and I got used to doing things a certain way. But once I really took a step back and was just sort of thinking more of like, how is this person seeing me when I do this? Or what kind of example should I be setting for delivering work a certain way, or this email, or like responding to something like this? Like, I think that the more time I spend thinking about how others perceive me as a leader makes it easier for me to like be a better one, which sounds like not really that much of a action item in terms of like what other people can do. It's sort of like a personal thing. But and then I just like, I mean, reading books, I've read several in the past like 6 or so years, just like about, you know, running a team and understanding just like how to be a better leader and how to communicate. That's just a huge aspect of being a leader, is just like communicating well. So just trying to be mindful of all that is helpful. What was the second part of the question?
How do you navigate growing a team?
I would say navigating a growing team, I just think that first impressions really do say a lot for me about a person. And I think that like any person that I've had a really good interaction with in the first 5 minutes, like, has usually turned out to be someone really great for the business. Like, I think that, you know, someone behind the camera who we work with all the time, Emily, like, I knew within like the first 5 minutes, I was like, she's awesome. Like, yeah. She's wonderful.
Emily's like our you're on your more yeah. than like anyone we've ever met, like, in this industry.
And that's just sort of like, you know, when you know you found a good like unicorn, you know. And it's just like, I think that we've had very like a lot of luck with hiring, and there's nothing more important than like that in terms of business. So I don't know, taking it slow and also not hiring too quickly, taking your time and making sure that you're not,
it's not always been 100%. Our batting mm-hmm. average is 99th percentile, but you know, there've been some missteps.
Yeah.
And that's really hard to deal with, honestly. Like, there have been, like, my goal is always like 100% employee retention, because like the very few times over the course of 7 years where it hasn't worked out with someone has been really, really difficult, because it's, you know, I don't take lightly that, you know, having to let someone go is horrible. And, you know, there have been, very rarely, but there have been times where, you know, because I do think like something that I really do pride myself on and try to have a consistent batting average on is like, if someone works with me, like, okay, maybe I'm like opinionated or, you know, whatever the case might be, but like, it's important to me that everyone walks away like, I was treated fairly, mm-hmm. I was compensated fairly, I was, you know, respected. Like, I wasn't, you know, overworked, whatever it might be. And, you know, I would say again, like even with some of the partners that we've had, where it's not necessarily an employee or a contractor, but it's people that we've worked with at a very high level. Like even when we've gone our separate ways, like we left Complexly for those, you know, who know John and Hank. And like, even that was like a very amicable, respectful, you know, mutually sort of beneficial process that, you know, is always very important to me to maintain. And there have only been a few times, but when it's happened, like, you know, obviously that publisher was an example, but it's also happened with individuals where, like, I think I was a little naive at first about the fact that everyone is always operating with 100% good intentions mm-hmm. or good faith mm-hmm. or is going to be totally honest and upfront in their dealings. And I do think that something that is important in leadership is to remember that when you have, you know, someone who is not doing their job or not behaving, you know, respectfully or what it may be, it's not just that person. It doesn't just affect that person. It affects everyone on the team.
100%.
And it creates a terrible environment. And there is nothing harder in a professional capacity, especially if you're a business owner, than having to end a relationship, whatever that relationship might be. But you can only delay it. You can't avoid it. And by avoiding it or by delaying it, you're just hurting everyone and eroding the strength of the team.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think that it's something that we've talked about before, where it's just like, if you could go back and change something with an employee that didn't work out, it's just like understanding that you knew it wasn't working sooner and not dragging it out and like sort of nipping that in the bud more quickly, because at the end of the day, it's not about you feeling uncomfortable about having to have a difficult conversation with somebody. It's about what's getting eroded for the larger team the longer this person is here. And that's much more important than whatever discomfort is there for the person that has to ultimately have that difficult conversation with them.
Okay, yeah. So I have a little fun modified rapid fire, just a couple last fun questions. Okay. So whatever comes to the dome.
Oh,
so
no.
Share a funny memory from the early days.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't want to prep you on these because I didn't want canned answers.
Yeah, okay, funny?
Something funny.
Okay.
Like, looking back. It doesn't have to be a stand-up routine.
Okay, well, this was not funny at all in the moment, but we definitely laughed about it later on that day. But when we went on our book tour and we had a shoestring, I'm talking shoestring budget, and we did not know how to, like...
Lost so much money on that tour.
Yeah, we did. But, like, one thing that was just, like, very, very obviously a lol idea was, like, getting books that we were sent from the publisher to the various cities and locations. And like, I think we packed like 80 pounds like worth of our books in roller bags at Chelsea. We were trying to get on I don't know where we're going. It was the Amtrak train or something. And like, we were trying to
lift. On an Amtrak on the West Coast. What is happening?
No, but we also did an East Coast tour. But you were trying to lift
I think
up.
That was San Diego to LA.
Okay. But we were trying to lift up this incredibly heavy bag that was just filled with books. And like, you were just trying to get it up the escalator, and I think there was a moment where like something broke the strap, the thing opened, your shoe, like I don't know what it was, but I was just like, what are we doing? Like, how are we like tasked with the enormous responsibility of like operating, producing, performing at this like book tour? Like, it just felt like I have to laugh or I'm going to cry, because like, it was such a bad idea to like us manually move like 80 pounds of books each, like, to these different locations. It was just like, oh my god, it was just a real lulzy moment where I was like, we are so in over our heads. I don't know, it was like the kickoff of the tour. It was bad.
I have to add to that, that's not even the worst, because you weren't there for when I had to go to the like USPS on the outskirts of town. Like, I went to this
set them up for why you were there. So the like gift bags didn't arrive in time with
correct.
The book. So you
correct.
Were like going to pick it up on like, the outskirts of town.
The package got delayed. So I had to go to, I think it was maybe a FedEx office. It was like fully 30 minutes outside of the city where the event was. We are an hour away from the event starting. I am freaking out, sobbing in this FedEx, because I'm like, because it was the distribution center.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like a random FedEx location. And they were like, yeah, we can't give out books like this. And I was like, I'm going to kill myself in this FedEx if you don't give me the books.
Didn't you say that you like ran into a glass door that shattered?
Girl, you are just spoiling my story. But so I had gotten an Uber there, and this poor woman was sitting there for 30 minutes. And I was just
started. I was there.
It was already happening.
I was working the room by myself with the sponsor, the client there. And I'm like internally like having a full on meltdown. And I'm texting you on the side while I'm like working this event that we're supposed to be working together that you're like 30 minutes late for because you're trying to pick up this swag.
But so they give it to me with this like dolly. And I have these like three boxes of books and it's like these sliding glass doors. And I just go running out and the dolly hits the glass door and breaks it out of the door frame.
I can't. My face must be so red.
I'm crying. And the guy was like the FedEx guy who had already like had up to here with me was like, just go, girl. I'll deal with it later. Like, it was such a nightmare. I
don't, like, the mechanics of how that whole thing panned out for you, I don't even know because you were like too scarred to even talk about it. All I got from you was like at that event was just like, I broke a sliding glass door and the guy was just like, leave. Like, just go. Take your books and get out of here.
Never return.
I don't want to see your face around here ever again.
It was like I was like a hex on that store. But okay,
that's just one big lull was that book tour. When you're shipping, like, long story short, when you're shipping things all over the country to various cities, like, you don't know when they're going to show up. I had things shipped to our hotels that didn't show up that I was like downstairs at the concierge desk like 20 times a day asking like, did that thing show up, because we needed it for the event that night. We had no money to hire. Like, it was just the whole thing. I cannot believe we pulled it off. I can't. If you asked me to do it again, I'd be like, yeah, no. With like five assistants, we could do it.
Oh, yeah. And we do events now, but like we roll in.
Oh, my God.
Smell a flower.
Yeah.
Open a glass of champagne. Have a glass of champagne and just see it happen. Okay.
Good times.
You really delivered. Okay. So the other rapid fire. So we had that. And one story where you felt, an anecdote where you felt really successful, like, man, I nailed that.
I haven't done a presentation in a really long time, but I remember that was a huge thing for me personally, that like public speaking is challenging. And I don't remember where our biggest like talk was. It might have been at one of the book events, honestly, where we had a room of like maybe 500 people. It was a packed book tour stop. And feeling like we got off the stage and like we nailed it, that was like a moment that was huge for me, because I was like, wow, I was able to like keep it together up there. I was like speaking thoughtfully. I like didn't embarrass myself. Like, it's just a huge sense of accomplishment, because it goes above and beyond like the business that you're building behind like a computer screen all day. It was like interacting with the audience, and it was like a huge deal. And like that, I mean, not to bring it to the book tour again, but like that probably was one of the bigger moments where I felt like super duper proud, and just like spotting you from across the room. Like, we both have like a wine glass in our hands. Like, it was just like peak experience, just like loving life. But yeah. And then also just like seeing our book in like stores was amazing. Launching. I mean, there's so many moments, but I'll just cap it at those two.
Love that. I mean, I have our New York Times book review framed in my bedroom.
Yeah.
Although that guy did call me foul mouth, which yes, I am.
Honestly, that's not a bad thing.
No.
I mean,
like a foul mouthed guide to personal finance or whatever. he's like 70. But anyway, okay. So thank you, Lauren. Where should people go to attend this life-changing workshop for entrepreneurs and small businesses?
In the description of this video, we're going to put the link to the event so you can just like head down there and figure out where to go from there, buy your ticket, read about the event, but it should be in our description below. So that's exciting.
Thursday, July 21st at 6:30 p.m. and you guys will be getting an exclusive discount.
Well, I'm super excited.
Well, Lauren, thank you for joining.
Thanks,
you
everyone.
Walked all the way over from your desk, 15 feet away.
Yeah.
And thank you guys for tuning in, and we will see you next Monday here on an all-new episode of The Financial Confessions.